July 14, 2021. It's Watt and Pedro Show. Thank you. Show. Happy Wednesday. Pulled it out at the bottom of the ninth. Thought it was going to be a no-go, but it's the Geo. Start off the show with John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk doing Monk's Mood. And then Lord Tang, 8-9. And you could probably hear a voice. People, you can probably tell I'm not man alone because those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Mr. Lord Tang himself, Dominic Cramp. Welcome aboard, Dominic.
Thank you very much, Mr. Watt. I appreciate that.
And we got to give credit to the Brutal Street No, Brutal Sound Effects Crew. Sorry,
Brutal Sound Effects, yeah.
Right, and where are you talking to me from?
I'm up in Oakland, California.
Oaktown, okay. You know who lives there? Ted, Brother Ted from Flipper.
Oh, yeah, I do not know him.
Well, there's a lot of cats, but he's one.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to do a tour with him a couple summers ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. David Yao was a singer, man. But let's get into your journey through music, because I find it most interesting.
Okay.
Please bring us the earliest musical recollection that you have.
Well, I thought this question might be coming, so I gave it some thought.
All right.
And really what kind of set me off in terms of where I think I landed with my passions is my dad. Now, I can't remember if he also gave me AC/DC. I kind of think he didn't. But when I was like 12 or 13, he gave me Jimmy Smith.
Organ Trio.
Yeah, Organ Grinder Swing was the record.
Yeah, he did the bass with his feet.
Yeah. But Jimmy, and so I had that cassette at the same time that I had AC/DC Back in Black.
Wow,
and
those are good.
The energy of those two things together, to me, were kind of the same, right? Like,
yeah.
And I literally would go crazy. You know, I would like destroy my room. I would just put those on and go completely nuts. So I think what to me was driving was the energy of both those things. And I think that's something I've really was sort of a guiding point. And then at the same time, I also had a friend who, you know, you either have a friend or a big brother, but I had a friend who got me into Sonic Youth and really early Mudhoney when that first started. And kind of put me on a trajectory away from kind of more of the new wave stuff that I was kind of into at the time. So
now your pop, it sounds like he listened to a wide range of music.
Yeah, I mean, he's mostly into jazz, you know, but I think what he used to do a lot was he played a lot in the car. I mean, he does play guitar, but he would play counter rhythms a lot of the time or whatever we were listening to. And I think I just picked that up for when I was a kid, and he would sing harmonies and stuff. He's just a very natural musical guy. And I think that just stuck in my head.
So there was a guitar in the pad. Did you jump on that guitar?
No, I never did.
Okay. But, what about the first record you bought with your own money?
Oh, man. The first record, honestly, Howard Jones.
Oh, wow.
That was my first record. And I don't know if you know him, but,
yeah.
You know, doesn't really stand up to me over time, honestly. But at the time, he was kind of my guy because I just, from the minute I saw, I think it was I saw him, it was just him alone with a bunch of synths, you know, and I was, I don't know, 13, 12. And I just, there was something about that that really captured me. And,
the first all synth band I saw was this guy named Gary Wright.
Yeah.
He was opening for Slade and 10 years after.
He
had three other guys on synthesizer. It was an old synthesizer band. What was Gary the first gig Wright. You saw, Dom?
First ever gig was with my dad, which was Spyro Gyro.
Whoa, Lil Fuse.
Yeah, which is Fuse, yeah. So, and then, but the first one I saw on my own was Phil Collins.
Because
I grew up with Julian Coryell, who was my best friend at the time. It was Larry Coryell's kid.
Oh, wow, the guitar man.
Yeah.
He got attacked in his pad with a knife, right?
I don't know anything about
that. Yeah. He recovered like the guy, it was a whole invasion or something that slit the throat, but he lived.
Holy shit.
That guy's I think he's on the Steely Dan album.
He might be, yeah. I mean, he's one of the greats, you know, one of the legends.
Really good guitar man.
Anyway, so Julian had the hookup with a lot of cool concerts. And, you know, I was like, at that time, 10 maybe. We went to see Phil Collins and that, like, really floored me.
Let's talk about that time, like school. Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No, but honestly, when I was, I bounced around a lot as a kid. I'm actually originally British. And in England, you got to kind of decide what track you're going to be on pretty early, like when you're 13, 14, at least the time. And that's kind of the track you're on forever. And so we lived there at that time. I was probably about 13. And this all kind of happened at the same time when I was telling you about getting these cassettes and meeting this dude. And then I had this really crazy composition teacher that was really kind of out, you know, and he was really into John Cage.
Whoa.
And, like a lot of atonal stuff and then just really an improvisation. And I did something that was, you know, now kind of corny, but at the time I was, like I said, I was like 13. I made a piece out of just whatever was around the house, you know, like a doorbell and a toilet flushing. And I didn't know anything about music concrete or tape music or anything like that. I just thought it'd be kind of a cool idea. And he was really into that, really supportive.
So
and,
you were using a tape recorder as an instrument.
Yeah, kind of. And then, you know, at the same time, my dad got me this old radio and that had shortwave on it, but it was a really shitty radio. So I couldn't really get any shortwave on it or any stations, but I could get the sound. So I got really into the, I know there's just something about the sound of the shortwave.
Yeah,
just
I know.
Those like tones and the sine waves. And so if you mix all that together, that's kind of where my formative things were happening, I think.
Well, you are aware of Derek Bailey?
Oh, of course. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Because you said something about improv and, you know, so you're saying that in school there that you had to pick. So what did you pick?
I picked music and English, literature.
Okay.
But then I was only there for a year and we moved back here to the States, to California.
Okay.
And but I already kind of got that in my head that, you know, I would want to go on that trajectory.
What about the thing, you know, not after school, like graduate, but in the afternoon? The garage band, basement band, bedroom band.
Oh yeah,
you did
my
that.
My first, yeah, we. I had a band in high school called Amygdala, which was, yeah, we were basically, you know, we took a lot of cue from like Negative Land. Oh. They were like a big inspiration for us, and yeah. Honestly, Gruck. Well, I can't say, yeah, like Carolina and
oh yeah, Rainbow Carolina.
Yeah, just making like just. Stuff to be annoying, you know, just for the sake of, because we all lived in the suburbs at that time, and it was kind of like you either freak out or you just have a fairly normal existence, and so yeah. We just freaked out all the time.
Hate that N-word. And, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a real sober freak out, and yeah, we weren't all that good, but, you know, we...
How did you know about Negative Land in Carolina?
Mostly because of my friend Matt. He was an older dude again, and he knew about Carolina. And like at the time, what was really funny was I didn't understand it at all. Like he had this record, you know, and this was like 1989, and he had this vinyl with like pubic hair and like gravel and dirt in it. And I was like, why would you want to put that in a vinyl? I don't understand. And then later I kind of figured it out, but that was, I was like, why the fuck would you do that? And, so he got me into a lot of that stuff. And then he went on to do this crazy thing called Extreme Elvis in the early 2000s.
Well, I'm curious about this band. What was the name again?
Amygdala, like the amygdala. It's the part of the brain where emotions are stored.
Yeah. It's by the, where the spine meets,
Yeah, I think it's technically amygdala, but whatever. We call it amygdala.
What was the makeup of this band?
I was playing keys, and then we had a bass player.
Okay, tell me how you got on the keys, because you didn't mention that.
Well, that's kind of, I guess when I started, sorry, this is all over the place, but when I was in England, that's just, I guess in hearing Jimmy Smith, I got really drawn like electronics and the keyboards, you know.
Okay. So this band had a bass, a drum, a keyboard.
Yeah, and a singer.
Okay. Four-piece.
And then I would play keys, like jumping up and down on an exercise trampoline, and it was just, you know, like a lot of really
I shared to get. Stage with Rammstein, and they had a guy working the keyboards, but on a treadmill.
Oh, yeah, similar to that, right? Like, Gwar, you know, Gwar was a big influence.
Yeah,
in like,
Richmond.
You
gave me this Nice and Easy. I remember there was a Strangler song called that, but no, that was Nice and Sleazy.
Yeah.
Oh.
That chunk of music started with Lord Tang doing Nice and Easy. Parallel System, System 24 from the Rambutan Proj, upstate New York, Hudson Valley. Rianne Thompson, Anna LaCourtis, Donna Savoy Jr., Brian Lucas, Phil Todd, Claire Hardiman, and Eric Hardiman. Eric Hardiman is the big ringleader of that project. Bob Bucko after that with Typewritten Communique. Then Cine Chamber Clip 2 for Gray Area Theater in San Francisco from Victoria Shen. Bombas Prendon, The Day Started Out Nice. Schneller Toller Meyer after that with Backyard Lipstick. Al Margolis with Saxy Voice Whispers. And finally, Lord Tang with Clip Clop. Okay, so how long does this band last, this high school band?
We were together a couple of years, a few years.
Can you remember the first gig?
I don't remember the first gig. It's all kind of a mash, but I do remember, like, recording, because we were recording an ADAT, which at the time I thought was, like, the future of everything.
Sure.
This little, like, ADAT studio down in Palo Alto. Okay. And,
by Stanford.
You know, they just had a quadriverb, like, multi-effect unit and an ADAT. It was real, but, yeah, there were a lot of punk bands that recorded on there, like Seven, you know that band?
Yeah.
L7. That's
L7. And, yeah. And it was the all-lady one, right?
Yeah.
Because there was an L7 in Ann Arbor, too, that turned into the Laughing Hyenas.
Okay.
Yeah, that was actually before them. No one knows. Larissa, we lost her, but the guitar lady from both bands. And there used to be a Berkeley Square down there.
I used to go to Berkeley Square.
Okay. But it wasn't Berkeley because it's a Palo Alto shit.
Yeah, no.
It was Keystone. Palo Alto. I think it was called Keystone. The one the city was the Stone and then the Berkeley. They were kind of connected. And that one, Minutemen got to play with James Blood Ulmer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and he used our equipment. He didn't even change shit. They just plugged in and Calvin Houston was on drums. And I mean...
Damn, that's a gig.
Ali was on the bass, who's stopped since then. So, if you can't remember the gig, you remember the first recording.
Yeah.
And what was that?
I just remember being in the studio.
Yeah.
It was just sort of a magical process. I just loved, like, all, like, being in the dark, the smell, the, like, focus of it, just creating, you know, something out of nothing. It was just real magical.
That's a good point. The material, was it all original?
Yeah, except for, this is really funny, right? We did this one cover of The Waitresses.
Oh, wow. I Know What Boys Like?
Yeah.
Chris Butler's been on the show, the guy who wrote that song. He lives in Akron, Ohio.
Oh, really?
And I think Billy Fika, the television drummer, I think so.
Okay, but none of us could play it. We just really wanted to do it. But our singer was really good. So he sang on it, and then a couple of our drummer played on it, on the singer. But the guitar player and the bass player couldn't play it.
Okay.
So we had a friend of ours do it, and, you know, just put it up. But that's the song. We got that song on Live 105 when it was still there.
Oh, wow.
And it never really took off, but it was the only thing that, you know, kind of bubbled above ground that we did. Well, but we couldn't play it, so we never played it at gigs. It just sits there on the 7-inch.
So you did press it up. That's great. So
Yeah.
What do you do musically after this? I mean, let me ask you this. After high school, do you go to higher education music?
Yeah, I went to Santa Cruz. Well, actually, I went to community college, then I went to UC Santa Cruz.
Right, with the different colleges.
Yeah, but Santa Cruz, that's when I really started getting into electronic music.
Okay.
Because
you're saying it was acid, it helped you. Maybe?
It didn't hurt.
Okay.
But I really wanted to go to a school, because I'd already started, through the band, getting into kind of, like, early. I mean, I couldn't, well, I wish I'd known more about analog synths at the time because they were really cheap. I just didn't really know about that. But I really started getting into keyboards, and so I wanted to do, like, learn more about electronic music. So I was looking for a college that had, like, some kind of program with a focus on electronic music, and Santa Cruz had that, and it was pretty close, you know. And so I went down there and studied. I never really got to study, like, advanced kind of stuff, but I did the history and then got into the basic classes for composing, and we did a lot of, like, working on tape. And but we got to, for the history class, was with Gordon Mumma, who I don't know if you know him, but yeah, he was, like, really one of the legendary guys, built instruments for John Cage.
And, sure. I've read about him.
Yeah, he's a really interesting dude. So, but the cool thing was, like, back then, electronic music wasn't quite as hip as it is now. So I was one of the few people in there that actually wanted to study electronic music. Most people just want to record their band. So a lot of people just didn't use the studio. So I was just in there all the time just messing around with they had a modular synth and a bunch of tape recorders and, yeah, just made a lot of experiments. And
so it was a buttload of resource.
Yeah. Like just laying there to be used. So that's really kind of when I got the bug to get deeper into music. And
parallel to that, were you trying to be in a band still, or this was just man alone research?
No, I was jamming with a lot of people. I had like one analog synth that I bought off this dude for a couple $100, and I had a delay pedal. So I was kind of the trippy dude with the keyboard. So I would sit in with a lot of hippie jam bands, and I didn't really care, honestly. I played with all kinds of people, but that was playing, like, out sounds with rock bands seemed to be a lot of what I ended up doing, just jamming around.
Like Catalyst?
Yeah, kind of. and then at the time was the beginning of kind of, like, house music and sort of modern electronic music, and raves were happening. And
Was it Steve, the son of the Benihana guy, right?
Steve Aoki?
Yeah.
That was later on. This is still like the early 90s. Okay. So it was still like a pretty underground thing. Like the, just at warehouses, in the backs of houses, in the woods, at the beach. But I had a friend who had managed to put out some music and was hooked up with the label. And we ended up doing this ambient record, in like 1995. And that was really the first thing that I got put out. Was collaborating with him with this record label called Silent Records.
And what, did you have a name for this
in San Francisco? What's that?
Did you have a name for this project?
I called myself Arthur Dent after the character from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Douglas Adams. He died on a treadmill, so watch out when you're working out.
I didn't know that.
That's why I wanted you on the show, Dom, so I could fucking enlighten you to that.
Well, you certainly have. I would have thought he died in the bathtub, but
no, he was like working out on a treadmill. He's a big man. He was like 6'5" or some shit.
Yeah, I did read that. Like a really big dude.
Yeah, but it's a funny book.
I love those books.
Answer is 42.
The answer is always 42. Yeah. So those books had, you know, I've always been a big nerd, and those books had a huge impact on me. The humor of them, you know, and they're just so out there.
It's an extension of that Monty Python non sequitur thing, huh?
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
I like it too. And you think it informs your music?
Oh, big time, yeah.
I wish people would remember that, especially with the movement, man. There was no bigger component than humor.
Yeah, I do stuff under my own name that tends to, I don't know why, it tends to not have as much humor with it. But the other things I do, I've always tried to incorporate humor. I don't know why, it's just there. It just makes me laugh. And there's at least with Lord Tang as well, I've been trying to, it's kind of drifted in a darker direction, but at least initially I was conceptually trying to make it my quote unquote pop music, which to me just meant more color and trying to integrate more music within the kind of abstraction. And
that makes sense. Yeah. We're going to get into Lord Tang, but we're at the end of the first hour, July 14th, 2021 edition of Wap Pedro Show. Special guest, Dominic Kraft, hold tight for hour two. July 14, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watch for Pedro show.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
for Pedro Show start off the second hour. Lord Tang and Butterflies. Then Lucas Sabella with Ferrari. And then Lord Tang, as if in reply, people. Square wheels only get you so far, Mr. Ferrari. Well, Mr. Ferrari, I added. Now, okay, after Santa Cruz and this ambient record, and now you're out of school.
Yep.
What's next music for you, Dom?
Then I was just trying to do stuff on my own. I got, you know, it's funny. This was back still when you could kind of submit demos on cassette. I was sending demos to a lot of people. And I had come up with this name called Quolfus, which was just a made up name. I don't know where it came from. It just popped into my head. And so I was just writing. You know, it's really funny. I was using what beat was it? It was one of the Minutemen beats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I just remembered that. It was George like one Hurley of my really was, early tracks.
George Hurley was definitely a man with the beat in his hand.
God, you guys had some savage beats. Just, like, I don't mean savage necessarily as heavy, but just such a swing.
No, it was a trip.
And, like,
He taught himself drums by getting a copy of The Who's Happy Jack and Billy Cobham Spectrum. So it's this weird mix, and he got a set of headphones and just beat the shit out of it.
Yeah, now that makes sense.
So you're making demos, sending around, what, like to labels?
Yeah, and nobody was really interested. Thrill Jockey actually got back to me once and said, like, hey, that's kind of interesting. Do you have anything else? And I took that to mean, oh, that sucks, when they really meant, do you have anything else? And I just misread it. But I don't know, though.
Was it Bettina?
Oh, I don't know. But I don't, honestly,
okay,
I don't think.
A lady runs that label, and she's pretty open-minded.
Well, I just don't think at the time what I was doing would have really appealed. I'll get to that. But, like, I never really, I was just really chasing down, at the time, labels just to try and, but without really thinking about kind of what I was about, really. You know what I mean? Like, because, well, I'm kind of jumping the gun, but, you know, I've never had, until I started putting stuff out on my own with my own label that I run with a friend of mine, but my stuff is so particular, it's difficult to get labels to kind of,
What about the other route, performance?
The performance, that started with, I was doing a project before Lord Tang called Borful Tang, which was another solo thing. And that was much more of a noise kind of based, abstract, punishing sort of project. But that had like a really big backstory. It was like a really conceptual, much more of like an art project.
Well, I would consider music kind of art.
Well, I don't mean, yeah, I should say art, like, in terms of involving, I should say multidisciplinary.
Oh, it's, okay, so there's some visual components and...
Yeah, and like, it's a long story, man. And, because basically he was a being from another dimension.
Of course.
That had been, like, basic left on Earth, and... His way of trying to communicate was to look at all the various forms of music and synthesize them into something that made sense to him. And then that's what he was projecting out at the audience. But then I had this, he was real angry because no one would understand him. So I would never speak. I would just yell a lot. It was real guttural and just kind of angry.
Would you describe it as Cookie Monster?
A little bit, yeah. Like Cookie Monster meets, I don't know, Time Bandits, something like that.
Okay. Kind of, but I, you know, for some reason, you gave me none of that music though. So I'm gonna play some more Lord Tang. We're gonna get to the Lord Tang story, right? This is Lightning Walker. Thank you.
Als ob mir ein Engel an die Seele tippt. Ich drehte mich wie im Kreisel um mich selbst. Auf einmal warf sich ein Mädchen vor mir auf den Rücken, wie der Wind vom Echo rief. Es ist soweit. Wir haben es gepackt, altes Haus. Ich sehe was, was du nicht siehst, und das holt dir die Schalter raus. Und dann Gewitter. Die Quelle Licht schmerzt in meine Augen wie tausend riesige Splitter. Sie dröhnte mir ins Ohr. Endlich kann ich nicht selber sein.
aussehe, der mich um den Kopf überragte, versperrte mir den Weg, lachte laut und sagte, wenn du die Party-Crew siehst, du verlierst ihr Hauptquartier. Doch heute kommt da kein anderer mehr rein aus.
Why for Pedro show, that chunk of music started off with Lord Tang. It was Light Beam Walker, not Jim Beam Drinker, but Light Beam Walker. Well, you know what? If it's brown, it's going down. You know. Neural Outage after that with Stutter Glove. A Glazed Disco Ball from Sophie Dupale. The Other Side from DK, not Dead Kennedys, people. This is a synthesizer guy from overseas. And then finally, Lord Tang with Saints Assembly. So let's get into the Lord Tang thing.
Okay.
Bring it.
Well, I had stopped doing this Borful Tang character. I just got kind of... Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Oh, my phone's buzzing.
Tell him to wait. Tell him you're on the Watt from Pedro show. And you gotta fucking get this out. This Lord Tang.
No, that's sorry. Just threw me off because my headphones moving. I had stopped doing Borful Tanks. I just kind of got burned. I've been doing that for a bunch of years. I got kind of burned out on it, and it was just ended up on a really kind of bleak. I mean, I was kind of probably depressed at the time for any number of reasons, but I just wanted to do something with more kind of color to it, more light, more in my head, you know, it was going to be pop music. It didn't turn out like that at all, but you know, but something that had just more music to it, and try and incorporate that, like I was saying, with the more abstract stuff I've been doing. And then, I was trying to figure out like what to do for performance. And, I had done stuff with other bands in the past. I had this band we had a band called Modular Set. There was this improv group and we were kind of like a can type. That was what we're modeling ourselves after. And we'd done a lot of stuff with projections and, as part of that. And I was really into that idea of incorporating projections somehow. And so I wanted to be all in white and like a white suit so I could kind of be part of the painting, like instead of just being lost in the vid, like kind of make it not interactive, but make it an active component of the theater.
You personally were part of the screen?
Yeah, like I wanted it to be, I just didn't have the tech for it, but the idea initially was you would only see like color where I was and where I was, like the color would shift because I'd be moving through the projection in this all white. So I just didn't know enough about physics to know that that's not how projections work. you know what I mean? Like if you need to get that kind of density of material is just incredibly expensive and whatever. So I just kind of did the best that I could, but I initially didn't really know what kind of suit to come up with. I didn't know what to project, but I ran into a friend of mine, Kelly Porter, who does all the art for the records and that I project on myself. And it was just a real serendipity. Like we've been neighbors years before when I lived in San Leandro and it's just been buds. And I just hadn't seen him in a long time. And I happened to be at this show at the Berkeley Art Museum the same time he was. I was like, hey, man, you know, what's going on? What you been doing? And he had this booklet of his art. And I immediately was like, that's it. That's exactly it. And so honestly, his art has been a huge part of the overall thing, both in its inspiration and just in how much it kind of levitates the show.
You mean when you're coming up with material, you look at his stuff and you get ideas, you get inspired?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, I have his art on my walls. I've got a bunch of his stuff, and it's in my studio. And I've consciously done that and unconsciously. You know,
the arts come first, then the music, or the music, then, hey, that part goes with it?
The music almost always comes first, a lot of the ideas I get away from the studio, you know, to be in the, I'm walking down the street or in the shower or wherever, but... at least most, like, if I, you know...
No, I'm just trying to figure out how the collab works.
Oh, yeah, it's not... It's really more that, at the end, like, if he's doing, like art for the record, more often than not, I'll give him the music at the end of the process.
Okay, and he'll inform his art.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But in terms of like the show, at least the way it is now, he just gave me a ton of art, like maybe 30, 40 of his paintings, and I put them into a slideshow and then project those onto me. So it's like, it's a static thing, but the way it just, the intricacy that he has and the way he deploys it just really fits stylistically what I'm doing and the kind of colors I'm using and,
yeah, it's got its own dynamic. I mean, really interesting. I'd love to see you guys. One day I'm going to see a gig of yours, Don. We're at the end of the second hour, July 17th. Nope, July 14th, 2021. Just want Peter, so special guest Dominic Cramp. Hold tight. Hour 3! July 14th, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
clever mind, stare inside. You see sinister eyes, giant face through the window. Ice in your veins. I recall the medals, the longing for glory. This is not my calling, something you desperately want. Carry the money into the house. Another thought experiment. When a stork delivers new life to many lines that connect us, we're running in circles around the trees, tiptoed and silent. But hardened in battle, you're too far out on a limb. Another epic card trick failed. Planets in conjunction, souls aligned. Can't get away with that anymore. But I try to do well. Like a miner stuck underground. You lured me into this.
repeat our show. Third hour started off with my dub uncle, Lord Tang. Allure, something live from I Took Your Name Out of Holland. Every one of you is responsible. This Sam Locke Ward featuring Kylie Budin out of Iowa City. And finally, Lord Tang, Flay's Gate. And a gate, I guess the way you walk?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's from a book called Gormenghast. Have you ever heard of that?
No. Tell me about it.
It's by a writer called Mervyn Peake. And it's a trilogy of books that has been like a huge influence on a lot of stuff. The other project I did. Yeah, it's literature.
No, I use it a lot too. And then you were also saying that was like your co-focus in school.
Yeah, I've always been a big reader. And I try, you know, I sprinkle stuff around in my titles, hoping that someone will get it one day.
Okay. No, but I also like the way you can be inspired, and it's, you know, a level of abstraction where if you hear somebody else's music, you're kind of ripping off their licks and shit.
Yeah.
So that, I feel a little better about that on myself. I'd rather be inspired by, you know, reading a Jim Joyce book than, wow, there's James Jamerson bass line again. I'm going to take.
Slip that in there. Thank you.
We all owe that man. So, titles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got your buddy's art involved. Are titles ever first or are they last?
Always last.
Yeah, almost everyone I talk to. I asked them that because Watt's exactly opposite. I have to start with the title.
Oh, really? Is that because you're using lyrics or even with the instrumental stuff?
It might have lyrics. It might be instrumental, but the title gives me a focus.
Okay.
Maybe because I do most of the composition on a bass. And so I'm just trying to, like, anchor, have something where everything will be, you know, aid and abet to help bring the tune to be. And
so, yeah,
that's why I do.
Well, I guess it's sort of not similar, but I'll come up with a name that fits. Like if I have a thing, I'm like, okay, this seems like it might be a thing. I'll just come up with an idea to like whatever literally comes into my head, and I'll just call it that until the very last second, and then I'll switch it to something else. That kind of, but the thing that I call it, the temp name, generally does have something to do with, like, I'll call it Frazzles or Skinny Tree or I don't know, whatever, but something that does have some sort of connection to the actual idea. Or,
you know the Germs album GI, right? There's the other newest one, right?
I don't know.
Well, there is a song called that. And that's why really? It's called that, because they had two new ones. And it wasn't that new one, it was the other new one.
Yeah, well, that was whatever works.
So, you know, sometimes those working titles are very, they got a ground in some kind of reality. You're recording. Is it mainly in your pad?
Yeah.
So you're kind of self-contained, okay.
Totally self-contained. Yeah. I mean, I always get stuff mastered. I did master I mastered the very first version that was released, and then through a series of circumstances, this guy in Germany wanted to release it, like re-release it, and then he put it on vinyl, and we got it mastered, like out of house. Someone else mastered it. And after that, I've had everything mastered, and I don't master my own stuff anymore. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, I think you get some perspective when you bring it. The cat's got to be good and know dynamics. One thing I don't like about these days is this brick wall limit, and it's suffocating.
Oh, yeah. Actually, this I just finished another Lord. Well, there's a Lord Tang EP that I sent you that had Clip Clop on it. Was one of them.
Okay.
And that's coming out through this Belgian label, Mia Kusma. We don't have a date yet, but then I just finished another one. Just stuff I've been working on for the last year, and I had that one mastered, and he mastered it really low. Not really low, but lower than I expected, but. He had a good point when I asked him. He just said, well, it reflects the nature of the music. And I was like, yeah, that's a really good way to look at like.
And that, I think that's a good mastering engineer, because they got to have that kind of sensitivity. Every song's not K-rock. I mean, shit.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And when you actually look at the waveforms of various bits and pieces of music, it's all over the place.
Yeah. Dom, when I put together the show, right, I'm using a wave editor, so I see how some of this
Some of it
is like just bricks.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's literally fucked up. And then it could be like a dude on acoustic guitar. It's just terrible. Yeah. It's like, what the fuck, G? So,
yeah, it's, it
can
really
I ask you about recording?
Sure.
Okay, is it with pewters, or do you still use tape sometimes?
No, I've used tape, but more as a device just to like mangle a sound or make it like dirtier. But almost always I'm recording digitally.
And it's the flexibility of editing?
The immediacy of it. But I mean, it's definitely because
you talk about the graphic dimension. I mean, a lot of this computer stuff is kind of like that as you're making it.
Yeah, and you've got to have a bit of discipline because, you know, it's theoretically endless. But what I do a lot is, like, you know, I guess you'd call it mulch or something, where I'm, like, re-editing and reclassifying and redoing sounds to get to the finished piece, you know. So it may have gone through, like, I don't know, however many transformations before it's at, like, the finish.
I think that's valid, though, you know?
Oh, yeah. Right? That's
they
the
do,
way
they
I work.
Do a, well, they do x-ray on Leonardo painting. They see three or four paintings underneath that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, like, where Dub has been a really huge influence for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that process, you know? And I also haven't... You know, bass has always been important to me, and again goes back to, I think, Jimmy Smith and like that bass organ tone.
Foot pedals, not even left hand.
Yeah, and that's a really deep tone, you know, organ tone. Yeah. So I've always had like try to put bass in there where I can. But a lot of that, you know, initially the Lord Tank stuff was self-released because I had this label I started with my buddy Jared. And we've done stuff together, and we were in that project with Bill, the Talking Book. And, you know, one of the things I came up against with labels is realizing that, like, I have to kind of generate my own steam until a label might get interested, because it doesn't really fit into kind of a box for a label. You know what I mean? If you look at a label as a business, I just started to realize that, like, I wasn't necessarily a good investment. I mean... In terms of, like, if you're looking at it from that perspective, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So, but, you know, it's all in...
You know, speaking of Dub, you gave me a tune, My Dub Uncle.
Yeah.
Look. I'm happy.
Thank you.
whether we like it or not. Fog. It moves.
Crash music for this edition. Lord Tang, Sparkle Toast. Then we had a group, Crater Method, with Let's Dance. It's like jamming on David Bowie. Distorted cover of Brother Phil up in the mountains. Having a good, stuff, a good time. Then Jorge Bachman with part two of two, Dark Bellow. We didn't have enough time. He gave me a buttload of stuff, and I had just had to fit it in, this last piece, and I had to go over two parts. And then finally, Fog from Lord Tang. So, where can people find you on the internet, Tom?
I have the label I was talking about is HiganteSound.com.
Okay, so let's spell it for people.
Gigante, it's like a Gigante, like Spanish for gigantic.
For big.
Gigante or big. Gigante Sound, like sound.
Yeah, SOUND.com. Okay. And your next plan is to get this Lord Tang EP out, right?
Yeah, there's two EPs coming out, and then through this label, Gigante Sound, we have a bunch of, we're kind of reviving it. We've been dormant for a long time, releasing stuff on other labels, and we've got some stuff we've been sitting on that we're going to be putting out in the next few months, but there will be two Lord Tang EPs coming up.
And stuff that, what about that other Tang guy? Is he ever going to make a reappearance?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Unscripted, that's funny. But I actually have stuff that I'm going to be putting out as in amongst these releases for Borful Tang that I don't know why I've been sitting on it for like 5 years. It's mastered, it's done, and everything.
Can I put this out there? When you get it together, can you come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
Sure, man. I'd love to.
Okay. That'd be so bitchin'. Because I only know about it from description. It was the Lord Tang show, this one. So you bring in some other, your next appearance, you bring in some other dimensions.
Okay, man. I'd love to do that. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being on the show. People, July 14, 2021 edition of WAPEDO should keep your powder dry.